Elliott Finkel on January 21, 1977, for the Pittsburgh Section National Council Jewish Women Oral History 2.
Though I was born in Allegheny County, remember that my early years were in Washington County, where I grew up in childhood until I started into the United States Attorney's Office in Cannonsburg. In my early childhood in Cannonsburg, you must keep in mind that my parents, and I'm not referring to the period, say, 1916 to 1930. My parents and others of their generation were first-generation immigrant Jews from Europe, Austria, Poland, Russia, and other parts of Eastern Europe. And it was they who determined that the cultural traditions that they had in their own communities in Europe must be perpetuated in their new land. And so, though they were a small number, it was their determination that they have a synagogue, that they have a rabbi, that they have a shofet, that is a person who kills chickens and so on under the kosher principles, and that they have a cheder, which is an after-school Hebrew school for the teaching of their children. And so it was, as you can understand, an Orthodox community in which these dedicated Jews maintained their synagogue, a beautiful structure, maintained a rabbi. The women had their own ladies' aid society in which different ways of raising money to help the synagogue. And there was a full-time rabbi, and I and the young men of my age went to cheder diligently.
Now, this was in Cannonsburg. How big of a Jewish community was there at that time?
Not more than maybe 150 families. No, I would deduce that and say not more than about 100 families. Merchants, most of them, grocery, clothing, some real estate business, businesses of that kind.
This is prior to World War I.
This is prior to World War I, and in the years immediately following that. But by their thrift and diligence, they maintained all of the philanthropic and educational institutions of the Jewish faith that they had in their youth, in the Eastern European communities. The result was that I and others of my age grew up with a rather thorough understanding of the Torah, ability to read and write fluently in Hebrew. And it's very interesting to recall that during those years, and again I'm saying from the period 1915 to 1928 or 30, the Rodolf Shalom Temple, through an extension program operated by Miriam Schoenfeld, under the direction of Dr. Freehall, operated what was known as the Southwestern District Religious Schools Committee of Rodolf Shalom Temple. And so, as I became bar mitzvah and older, having graduated the Sunday school, I was immediately drafted into the task of teaching in the Sunday school. And we had the books and curriculum and so forth furnished to us by the Mary Schoenfeld's group. And I think we had a very thorough and successful Sunday school program because of Mary Schoenfeld.
I think we're getting a little ahead of ourselves, Mr. Finkel. If we could go back a little bit into your actual home life with your mother, father, brothers, sisters.
My father, Samuel Finkel, was born in Austria in the late 1880s, came to the United States as a boy about 13 or 14 years of age with his mother and four or five brothers and sisters, which he was the oldest child. And so he immediately had to undertake methods of earning a living and helping to support his mother and his brothers and sisters. His father came here to join them, but later took ill and wanted to spend his last years and to be buried in Austria, so he returned to Austria. And my father was one of the founders of the synagogue in Canterbury, Tree of Life Synagogue, and its initial president and president until he could persuade somebody else to take the presidency. My mother was Mary Weiner, W-E-I-N-E-R, who was born in Russia about 1890, and who likewise came here as a young girl. She had several brothers and sisters, one of whom was David Weiner, who settled and practiced law in Washington, PA, and later was judge at the Court of Common Pleas of Washington County. Another brother, John Weiner, later in his later years, became secretary to the congressman of the Washington Green County Congressional District and served as the administrative assistant to the congressman of that district, including Congressman Morgan, until John Weiner's death in about 1972. During the last 10 or 15 years that John was secretary to Congressman Morgan, it's interesting to remember that Congressman Morgan, Dr. Thomas Morgan, a physician, was chairman of the Committee of Foreign Affairs of the House of Representatives, and in which capacity his committee had to pass upon and determine very vital matters relating to the State Department's position toward Israel and our government's support for military and economic Israel. And I would say that first, that Dr. Morgan was warmly disposed toward Jews in Israel, and having Uncle John Weiner as his administrative assistant was an important plus during those very important years for business growth.
How many brothers and sisters do you have?
I have one brother, Harold, who grew up with us in Cannonsburg in later years after graduating and studied. Got into the ladies' ready-to-wear business. He had his own importing business in Florence, Italy during the 60s, where he lived for three or four years. And subsequent to that, about the early 70s, I suppose, became associated with an importing establishment in Los Angeles that imports women's wear from the Far East, where you would think Harold is associated, and where Harold now lives. I have three sisters. One, Mrs. Rosella, J.B. Goldberg, Sharon, Pennsylvania, who married Jacob Goldberg in the city many years ago, and reared a children. They were the ages of 55, 45, and 50. And they have been very active in the sharing community, in the establishment and the building of a new temple synagogue combination. And the family is very active in the UJF and other Jewish institutions there. David Goldberg is on the board of the Dallas Bank Sharon, and founded the Penn State branch at Sharon for the purpose of making available to young college people of that area an ability to attend Penn State University on the local campus. My other, another sister is Florence Chertoff. We had married Theodore Chertoff. And they spent most of their married life in and around Washington County until my husband's death in 1972. And since then, Florence has remarried and now lives in Los Angeles. My third sister, Mrs. David Major, with her husband, David Major, and their family in Washington here for the time of the marriage and birth and raising their family. And we're active in the synagogue and other activities in Washington County until her husband's death in about 1970, following what she wanted to go through.
In other words, you've had a background at home that apparently suited all of you to go into Jewish cultural activities. You had a feeling for doing something towards furthering the Jewish...
Yes, our home in Canonsburg was always the center, the focal point of the Jewish activities, whether it was the day birth activities of the community, young people's ACA activities, the Zionist activities, and the synagogues, the men and women's activities. One or another of our family was the president or acted as chairman of one or another of those organizations.
Were these organizations in operation prior to World War I in small communities?
Yes. Well, before World War I, I would have been just 6 or 7 years ago.
I see.
And my memory may not be too exact. But I know that as I grew up and moved toward my bar mitzvah years, all these organizations were meeting at our house, and the rabbi would be there. And if there was a confirmation, Dr. Frioff would come out to speak and be at our home before going to the synagogue for a confirmation exercise. And so our home was, and our family were always interested in Jewish learning, Jewish history, Jewish culture, Jewish institutions. And there was always the J.M.F. Pushkin in our house, as it was in all homes.
Did you relate to the non-Jewish community?
Yes. It was my, it's always had been my observation that Jews relate more intimately to the non-Jews in a small town than they do in a big city. In our neighborhood, down the street could live an Italian family, and across from them it could be a big family. And across the street from us was one of the leading physicians of the town, Dr. Johnson. The next door to us were the girls, the women, the high school teachers. And diagonally across the street from us was the man who was president of the bank. So our public school and high school life was an integration of all the ethnic groups and
you felt no,
black and white.
You felt no discrimination.
And there was
no discrimination
at all. As I went through high school and maybe became president of a graduating class, and we were raising money for a trip to Washington, D.C., which was a common thing to do at that time, there was great cooperation with all of these students in the activity of the graduating class in that project. And when it came to arranging for our trip to Washington, hotel was reluctant to accept the reservation for a couple of our black fellow graduates. We refused to make the trip until that position was changed. So far as we were concerned, we were an integrated ethnic cultural group, which I don't think we get a chance to do as fully in a big city. We become, I think, ghettoized.
So that during your growing up period, you associated with both groups and seemed to be very active and well-liked among all groups. There was no problem in your primary or secondary high school years.
Not at all.
Is there anything you'd like to mention about your education from the primary through the high school years? I note that you were valedictorian of your class.
Yes, that was in the high school class. It was a daily attendance of walking to school a half a mile or three-quarters of a mile away, up the hills and down the hills, but everybody did it. There were no buses. And the same way the synagogue was a good mile away, but everybody walked it until we got it out of the world, and my father and mother would walk it on our holidays and see cousins and friends. But in the early years in public school, we had excellent teachers and seemed to have been drilled in the basics. Three R's, reading and writing, reading a lot of plays, reading a lot of American literature.
Did you participate in extracurricular activities in high school? Were you athletically interested in their sports programs?
Yes, I did some intramural basketball until somebody smashed my glasses and I had to get a pair of glass protectors or something. And I did work for the, I was on a debating team, of course, throughout the 4 years of high school. And that was an excellent experience. And did some work with the Dramatic Society as well.
This was at Canonsburg High School.
That's right.
Canonsburg, PA.
Right. Had you thought then about law?
Yes, I was always of the determination that I was going to study law. Some of my family thought I would change directions for the governor, but my interest was the law. It's amusing that when I was in college with Jack Rothschild, about our sophomore year, we were over to Y, where we took history and Hebrew classes, and also in order to shoot pool at the Y. And Jack said, well, Elliot, next year let's go to Cincinnati. Then I said, well, what's going on in Cincinnati? And he said, let's study for the rabbinate. I said, you go to Cincinnati and study for the rabbinate. I'm going up to Harvard and study law. Jack and I were always very close friends. In fact, he, in his Marine uniform, came to Pittsburgh to perform the marriage ceremony to myself and my wife Lois, and I was still in the military uniform. That was in the summer of 1945.
Yes. Jack was rabbi in Atlanta, Georgia.
I think so. At that time, yes.
Now, from your high school, I'd like to get down on record something about your activities at the University of Pittsburgh, coming into the city of Pittsburgh.
Yes.
And your affiliations outside of the university. Did you maintain a Jewish interest?
Yes. I began at the University of Pittsburgh in the fall of 1927, commuting generally from Canonsburg to Pittsburgh by train. And then about my sophomore year, joined the Phi Epsilon Pi fraternity, and on occasion would sleep at the Phi Ep house. But when I wanted to be more concentrated on my academics, I'd go home and make sure that I could do my work at home. I was on the debating team at the University of Pittsburgh. I was admitted to the Druid Society, whatever it is. An honorary, I think, sophomore society. My major fields in Pitt were history and economics, political science. I found that at the end of my junior year, well, one thing had happened at the end of my first year at Pitt. I was asked to be interviewed by the committee of Harvard University Admissions Committee here in Pittsburgh, and they wanted to know if I would be interested in entering Harvard University under a scholarship under circumstances that I would begin as a freshman. And I, at that time, decided that that was rather an unreasonable course to take because it meant giving up a few years. So I But I started to say, I found at the end of my junior year in Pitt that I was only about 4 or 5 credits short of graduating. So I found that I could take those credits at the WJ for the summer and get credit for it at the University of Pittsburgh. So I went to WJ the summer of 1930, got those 4, 5, 6 credits, and so got my degree from Pitt in August of 1930, and had applied to the Harvard Law School, and was admitted to September 1930 law school class.
That sounds very easy, considering what the problems were for a young Jewish student who wanted to go to Harvard Law School.
Yes, it. There were problems at that time.
Were there financial problems, Elliot?
Yes. Keep in mind that the Depression had hit in 1929 or 30, and the whole bottom had fallen out of the financial resources of many people, including our own Jewish families, and they had to pick up the pieces and start all over again. I was fortunate to get some scholarship awards at Harvard, and for my third year, based upon academic record in my first 2 years, was given a scholarship. And the economic situation has to be geared into that era because it was in, I was in my third year at law school in the fall of 32, the spring of 33, and it was in January or so of 33 that Roosevelt was inaugurated for his first term, and the first thing he did was to close all the banks, which left all of us up there in Cambridge without any source of funds. But somehow we go along working. I used to earn a few dollars on Saturday or Sunday at Harvard, teaching the J Jewish ethics and religion and the history of Judaism at one of the Boston or Brookline synagogues.
In other words, you affiliated yourself with Jewish organizations while you were in graduate school.
Oh, yes.
It was very much part of your life.
Yes, both in the college days and in law school. And though the academic pressures were heavy, I mean, the time was pretty well consumed with academics, you still found that there was much reward in working with the AZA or B'nai B'rith or activities of that sort. And with synagogues or temples in their work relating to the history of the Jewish faith, prophets, the teachings of the prophets, and things of that sort.
So that being a very minority group in law school, you never at any time denied your Jewish.
Not at all. In fact, it was a happy environment at Harvard Law School for Jews. One of the great stars of the legal world is Benjamin Cardozo. Another great luminary in the legal judicial field was Louis Brandeis, who was on the Supreme Court at Wilson's appointment. One of my law school professors was Felix Frankfurter, who later became one of the justices of the Supreme Court. So the presence of Jews in a law school was welcome one, because we had some brainy boys in those days, and they went on to places of distinction, went on to government service. Felix Frankfurter placed many of the graduates in various government agencies in Washington, because that was one of Felix Frankfurter's jobs, to see to it that some of the boys had a place to get a job, because time of my graduation from law school in 1933, lawyers who were going down to New York were glad to get a job for $25 a week or for their subway fare. And when I was in law school, right across the Charles was the Harvard Graduate School of Business, and we got to go out of their man. They had an awful time finding. Some of them have family businesses to go back to, like I think Harold Cedar was in the Graduate School of Business at that time. But those who didn't have that fortunate relationship had a hard time finding any kind of job, much in contrast to the situation today. So the economic pressures of the depression of the so-called 30s was very much apparent at the time of our law school.
Did you have time for recreational activities in addition to law school and your interest in the Jewish community?
Oh, yes. Yes, we regularly used to attend the concerts of the Boston Symphony, although we would sit on the balcony, it was 50 cents, but we would attend their concerts. And there were hockey games and diversions with dates and dancing and so on. And if the checks from home were not forthcoming because of the banks being closed, everybody built a script. You give the cab driver an IOU, and one day he gets